Welcome to the Woodridge Baptist Church Podcast. For more information about what's happening in the life of our church, visit our website at www.woodridge.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Well, I invite you to turn to John chapter 10, and we're going to focus this morning on verses 11 through 16. So while you're turning there, as I was thinking about this theme, you've probably caught on to the theme this morning about the Good Shepherd and pretty much everything that we've been singing all morning, right? So I was thinking back to a mission trip I was on a couple of years ago, and as we were going out in Central Asia, and we were going up on a mountain, we had a guide. And I'll be honest with you, I've never been so thankful in my life for a guide. I mean, some of you go out fishing and you take a guide, and that's like one thing. But it's a totally different thing when you're going out in the middle of you don't know where, and you have a guide. You know what I'm saying? Because we were out in the middle of we didn't know where. And I just remember as we were kind of climbing up a mountain, and so the whole point as we were going up is on the top of these mountains were going to be shepherds with their sheep, because that's where they went in the summertime, literally up to the top of the mountains. And so there we were trying to scale. We ended up scaling over 10,000 feet of mountains to get up there so that we could share Jesus with these people that had never heard about Jesus before. But I'm just remembering this moment as we're climbing those mountains. I'm like, you know what? I'm real thankful for that guy. You know, the guide that knew exactly where we were going. And all we had to do was to follow him. And that's especially true nowadays when you think you could get anywhere by your phone. But when you're off the grid, you're going to be relying on something else. Thankful for a guide. And what we're talking about today in John chapter 10, Jesus has some things to say about himself, the I am statements that he makes thematically through John's gospel. And today he's going to say this about himself as we start in verse 11 of John chapter 10. Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he's a hired hand and he cares nothing for the sheep. I'm the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. One flock, one shepherd. If you look at this in John chapter 10, the imagery of a shepherd, like if you just look in scripture, shepherds and sheep, that goes way, way back. It runs deep, deep, deep in Jewish thought. It's a metaphor. It's supposed to say something to us. So when you look at sheep, I mean, sheep are named in the Bible more than any other animal. When you think of some of the greatest figures in all of scripture, you think of somebody like an Abraham, or you think of Moses, or you think of David, all of them were shepherds. The most well-known and probably most loved chapter in all of the Old Testament is Psalm 23, which is about God, our great shepherd. You know, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want, or some of it might be better translated, I don't lack for anything. There's nothing that I lack. The greatest Old Testament prophecy of the Lord Jesus is probably in Isaiah chapter 53, which contains two different kind of word pictures about sheep. One part's about us, the other part is about Jesus. Let's talk about us first. In Isaiah 53:6, it says, all of us like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way, but the Lord has caused the iniquity of us all to fall on him. Think about this. That's us. We're the sheep and we've gone astray. But then you have this picture of Jesus in Isaiah 53:7. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before the shearers is silent, so he didn't open his mouth. Two completely different word pictures in Isaiah about sheep, who we are in relationship to the shepherd. So since we're sheep, have you ever thought about what that means the Bible is kind of describing us as? It's not necessarily a compliment, in case you haven't thought about it here lately. I mean, first of all, sheep, they're not necessarily the smartest animals in the world. Or as we pointed out last week, their biscuits aren't all cooked. You know what I mean? But they're not completely dumb, to be fair to them. There was a university professor found that they're actually really good at recognizing faces. They recognize faces very well, and they recognize voices very well. And so when you look at that, you go, check the box for the sheep on that one. You know, they might one up us in that sense. That said, sheep tend to do dumb things. They'll fall into a bog or a river, and then they'll be rescued by the shepherd, and then they'll jump right back into the bog or the river. That's one of the ways that the Bible is describing us. It's just a smidge offensive at times, isn't it? Wouldn't you agree with me? It's also correct, right? It's correct. Sheep aren't the smartest. Sheep have poor eyesight. When you look, their eyes are basically mounted on the side of their head. They can see peripherally really well. Some have said they can see almost entirely behind them, but they can only see basically to the front of their nose if you're talking about what's ahead of them. That's not the place that they can see. So what they typically do is they're going to kind of follow around what it is that they can see. So if Curly the sheep is going to the left, then, you know, I don't know, Chunky the sheep is going to kind of follow Curly to the left. You know, if he breaks off to the right, he's probably going to break off to the right. Why? It's just what they do. Sheep can also be stubborn. They can be stubborn. They'll stomp their feet. They'll refuse to budge. Now, the good news is with the shepherd, they actually have a way of provoking the sheep, right? Because if they're going to stomp their feet and they're not going to budge, they might get a little smack in the fanny by the shepherd. It's like, we're going to keep moving. We're going to keep going. But they can be stubborn. For the most part, sheep are pretty docile. You know, for the most part, they're actually pretty calm. But they will butt you with their head if they want to. In fact, let me encourage you this, not right now, because we're all together. But this week, maybe go on the YouTubes and put in something like this, when sheep attack, and then just watch for a while. Because in deep preparation for the sermon this week, I did that. My favorite one, by the way, is, I have no idea what this woman was doing, but it looked like she was doing some sort of warm-up for karate like this, and there was a slope behind her. She doesn't see it. But down comes the sheep running down the hill. And I'm like, she's about to get it. And she did. Bam, right in the back. And she was doing her cry. And she tumbles over. And I totally cracked up. I had been watching for 1 hour at that point. 1 hour. And when I saw that, I was like, I'm not going to top that one. And we're going to stop. And we're going to get back to actual sermon preparation at this point. But you can go watch when sheep attack. And you're going to die. It is hilarious. They're mostly docile. But, you know, you never know. You never know what mood they're going to be in. That could be like us. Here's the other thing about sheep. Did you know they're mostly defenseless? I mean, I know I just said that they'll headbutt you, but honestly, they're pretty defenseless creatures when you think about it. They can't really outrun their enemies. They're slow. So he's like, run! That's probably not going to work. I mean, do you really see a sheep outrunning a wolf? That's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. And they have little to fight back with, right? I mean, it's not like they're weaponized. They just don't have a lot to fight back with. It's not like they have these great teeth or claws or something like that. They're mostly a defenseless animal. And what that means is that they really need someone there to protect them. They need that. It's just not something that they have in and of themselves. Here's another thing about sheep. They tend to wander. Not wonder, like deep thoughts. We're talking about wander. It's like, there they are just snacking on grass. And it's like, I think I'm just going to go over here, right? Off the sheep go. There they go. Here's the catch, though. They typically aren't very good at finding their way back when they wander off. Think about this. Like the great prophecy in Isaiah 53 says, they often go astray. They wander and they forget their way home. This is kind of the point of this. When you're alone, just like when they wander off, and especially for where they lived back then, they would often fall into cliffs, wander off, boom, and then they would drop. And then the shepherd is the one that's having to go and to dig them up out of the rocks and the crevices and whatnot. Now think about this. What shape do you think the sheep were like in when the shepherd showed up to pull them out? See, the wandering off, I mean, good for the shepherd, right? But the wandering off, a lot of times by the time the shepherd gets there, there's a lot of damage done. There's a lot of damage done from the wandering around. So simply put, sheep need a shepherd. And they need a good one at that. Is that fair? They need a good one at, who would want a bad shepherd? I don't. That said, think about what Jesus says in John chapter 10. I am the what? Good shepherd. There's a New Testament scholar, Dr. A.T. Robertson, and he said something about this that I thought was pretty interesting. He said, if you look at the Greek, like literally look at the Greek, it reads more like this: I'm the shepherd, the good one. Do you see a difference there just yet? Because you might be like, yeah, I don't get it yet. I'm the shepherd, I'm the good one. So what that would mean is there are some bad ones. Think about this. All this word picture and imagery in John chapter 10 is drawing from something that was spoken of in the Old Testament, specifically Ezekiel chapter 34. If you look at Ezekiel 34, 1 through 4, look at it. It says, the word of the Lord came to me. Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to the shepherds of Israel who only take care of themselves. Should not shepherds take care of the flock? And the answer is, yeah, that's what shepherds are for. It goes on to say, you eat the curds, you clothe yourself with wool, you slaughter the choice animals, but you don't take care of the flock. You haven't strengthened the weak or healed the sick or bound up the injured. You haven't brought back the strays or searched for the lost. You have ruled them harshly and brutally. There's some bad shepherds out there. In the context of what Jesus is talking about in John chapter 10, there were bad people, shepherds that is, that he was talking to. The Pharisees and the priests. He's basically borrowing this imagery in Ezekiel 34 to make a point about who he is. I'm the good one. And about who they were supposed to be. You were put here to be shepherds and you've been bad ones. You haven't taken care of the people that have been entrusted to you. And they loved it when he said that stuff to them. I'm just kidding. Don't write that down in your notes. They hated it. They hated it because they knew what he was saying. But then he says, he draws from the same passage in Ezekiel 34. If you look at verses 11 through 16, because it says, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he's with them, so will I look after my sheep. I'll rescue them from all the places where they were scattered on a day of clouds and darkness. I'll bring them out from the nations and gather them from the countries, and I will bring them into their own land. I will pasture them on the mountains of Israel, in the ravines, and in all the settlements of the land. I will tend them in a good pasture, and the mountain heights of Israel will be their grazing land. There they will lie down in good grazing land. And there they will feed in a rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost. I'll bring back the strays. I'll bind up the injured and strengthen the weak, but the sleek and the strong I will destroy. Do you see a contrast between the shepherd, the good one, and the rest of them? And this is what he says. I'm going to go and I'm going to find them. In Israel, just so you know, like back then, they would use a sheepfold at night. So typically during the day, what the sheep were doing is they were kind of headed out. They were going out to, they got to get their snacks, y'all. They're like us. They got to eat. And so they would head out to pasture. They would go and they would eat, and the shepherd is the one that would guide them out. And they would eat and they would find water and they would find rest. They would lie down and they would do, sometimes they would work, and then they'd be brought back and then they'd be put into the sheepfold at night. The sheepfold had like walls around it, but there was one door, there was one gate, and you had a doorkeeper that was there at the gate. Jesus is using, if you look through John chapter 10, Jesus is using a number of different word pictures for you to understand who he's trying to tell you that he is. Because on the one hand, he says, I'm the good shepherd. But just before, he says, I'm also the gatekeeper. I'm the doorkeeper. Look at it like this. So at night, all the sheep are like corralled in, and, you know, they go into the sheepfold and they have the walls up there and they're protected there. And then you have the doorkeeper or the gatekeeper that stays at the door. And this is basically what it's saying. You're going to get to the sheep. You're going to have to come through me. You will have to come through me. But fast forward, you know, night's over, the morning has come, and all the shepherds are coming back and they're coming up to the sheepfold where all the sheep have been all night. And there's the gatekeeper, there's the doorkeeper, he's right there. And as they would come up, he was the one that was going to vet them to determine whether or not they were the shepherd for the sheep that they were coming for. Jesus says, yeah, that's me. That's me. I'm the doorkeeper. And I'm not just going to let anybody, because he says they're robbers and they're thieves and they're here to harm and to hurt. And I am not going to let them in to hurt the sheep. That's not going to happen. But in this same word picture where he's trying to say, look at them, robbers and thieves, wolves in sheep clothing, all of this going on, he also says this about himself, and I'm the good shepherd. I'm the one that will walk out to take them to pasture where they're going to eat. I'm the one that will take them to the water so that they'll have something to drink. I'm the one that will do all of it. I will do all of it. All of these pictures are here. And when you think about the sheepfold, all these shepherds are coming in. They had a number of different flocks that would go into a single sheepfold. And though even though sheep are a little bit slow, they still had enough smarts to know the voice of their own shepherd when the shepherd would call out. As we were pointing out last week, one of the things is that the thieves and the robbers, they would try to put on the frock of the shepherd. They would try to disguise themselves so that they looked just like the shepherd. They even tried to change their vocal inflections so they sounded just like the shepherd so that the sheep might come out and actually follow them. Jesus in John 10 says, no, my sheep know my voice. They know my voice. And they'll be able to tell the fake from the real because of how well they know my voice and stay near to my voice. There's this prophecy in Ezekiel 34, this chapter that we've been quoting this morning about Jesus. And you see this in verses 23 and 24. It says, I'll place over them one shepherd, my servant David, and he will tend them, and he will tend them and be their shepherd. And I, the Lord, will be their God, and my servant David will be the prince among them. I, the Lord, have spoken. Here's what's interesting about why I'm quoting Ezekiel 34 is in the history of Israel, you think about King David, he was quite the guy. If you think about it, as a youngster, as a shepherd, he went against a bear, and I don't mean a Baylor bear. He went against a bear. He fought a lion that came against his flock. He fought it off. Later, he went out against a wolf named Goliath, if you remember him, big guy. Why? Because he was the one that was threatening the flock of Israel. Nobody's willing to stand up to this guy. And David goes, I'll do it. I will do it. He's like the great shepherd king when you think about it. And yet, when it mentions David here in Ezekiel chapter 34, this is 400 years after he's dead. How in the world is David, as a dead guy, going to be the shepherd over Israel when he's dead? And the answer is, it's not talking about David. It's not talking about him. It's talking about the one that comes from the line of David that will be the one shepherd, which is Jesus. It will be him. It all sounds good, doesn't it? I'm the shepherd. I'm the good one. It sounds great. But then I started thinking, okay, so we have a good shepherd. Does this mean that only good things are going to happen to us? And the answer to that is no. That isn't what it means. Even Psalm 23, the famous psalm, the Lord is my shepherd, has both pastures, still waters, and valleys. It's got all of it. It's got all of it. Think about this one line. Even though, and most of your translations say, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. But the Hebrew actually reads a little bit differently there. It would read something like this. Even though I walk through a valley of deep darkness. Have you ever been in a place, like literally physically, work with me here for a second, people. Have you ever been in a place physically that is so dark you could put your hand in front of you and you couldn't see it? Have you ever been there before? It would be that kind of dark. Sight is not going to be your way. So even though I am walking through a valley of deep darkness, I love this quote. One scholar said, as shepherds led the flocks in search of grass and water, they must pass at times into and through deep, rugged wadis, which are dry stream beds, a I tried. Cut through the hills by the winter rain. The air at the bottom of the deep ravines is thick and it's heavy with the heat of the day. Like canyons, they are covered in dark shadows as the cliff walls block the sun. The whole flock had to struggle over the rocks and the boulders up the sides of the canyon. If the flock is caught in a wadi during the storm, a flash flood could sweep them away to their death. And to make it worse, wild animals live in the shelter of the wadi, ready to tear the sheep to shreds. The shadows of these dangerous canyons are a picture of terrors and trials. And yet, even then, we trust the shepherd. Yet even then. Think about it like this. They're going down into a deep ravine that is so deep that the sunlight is completely blocked off. Even though I go through a valley of deep darkness. Even though. And part of the reason that they're even on the move to begin with, and there are a number of reasons for this, but this would be one. Imagine that you have a group of sheep that have been out at pasture in a certain area for a while. After a while, they've kind of snacked that ground to death. You understand what I'm saying? This is kind of what they say about sheep. You leave them in one area, there's not going to be a blade of grass left. So they have to keep moving. They go from pasture to pasture to pasture, which means by the direction of the shepherd who knows exactly where they're going, they go from provision to new provision to new provision and to new provision. The shepherds know where everything is at. However, just because of the terrain of where it is that they live, sometimes what that means is that they'll go down into a ravine to get to the next place. This is the valley of deep darkness. And who is it that is walking them through it, even guiding them to the next place of provision as they're walking through a valley of deep darkness? And the answer is, it's the shepherd. The shepherd is the one that's doing it. So listen to it maybe with a little bit of a different flavor this morning. Even though I walk through a valley of deep darkness, I have no fear. I have no fear. Why? Because you're with me. You are with me. It doesn't say that evil isn't real. It says I don't fear it because you're with me. Arno Gabelin was looking at the 23rd Psalm and he said something I thought was really good. A good way to read the Psalm and connect it to what we're talking about in John chapter 10 is by asking this question, what shall I not want? What shall I not want? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Well, what shall I not want? Here's what he said. I shall not want for rest, for he makes me to lie down in green pastures. I shall not want for peace, for he leads me beside the still waters. I shall not want for forgiveness, for he restores my soul. I shall not want for guidance, for he leads me in the paths of righteousness. I shall not want for companionship, for you are with me. I shall not want for comfort, for your rod and staff, they comfort me. I shall not want for provision, because you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. I shall not want for joy because you anoint my head with oil and my cup runs over. I shall not want for everything in time, for goodness and mercy will follow me. And I will not want anything in eternity, for I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. That's the good shepherd. That's the one. That's who he is. So I got to thinking. A darkness, and you'd be thinking about your own experience right now, a darkness, even though I walk through deep darkness. There's nothing in the psalm that asks you to act like it's not what it is. Nothing in there. You're experiencing the darkness. It's where you're at. What you might be on is on steps to get to the next place of provision, but you're in the darkness. You feel it. You can't see. It's that dark. You can't see. You don't know where you're going. Two great pictures of the way that shepherds would work back then. How in the world did the sheep know where to go? If the experience was like that, how in the world did the sheep know where to go? And the answer was, the shepherd kept talking. He kept talking, and he kept talking, and he kept talking. You could listen to the voice. There was another possibility, though, is that you could follow the shepherd so closely you could touch the hem of their garment. You could touch. But you know what wasn't available to you? Sight. That wasn't it. It was something else. Listening to the voice, following close beside. And on the other side of the deep darkness would be like an alpine meadow. It was a new place for the sheep to graze. It's the place that the shepherd know where to take them for their next provision. That's what a good shepherd does. That's what he does. I have had some moments, even lately, where it's just been difficult. And I don't think that what the Lord has asked me to do is to pretend like it's been easy. He's just not like that. It's just not like that. I think what he has asked, though, is to remember, even though I might be walking in a valley of deep darkness, maybe my feelings aren't the best guide. Maybe they're not. Doesn't mean they're not real, but maybe they're not the best guide. So that the voice of the shepherd would be louder than any feeling that would draw me to doubt him. That, I think, is what he wants. That is what he wants from me. I think that's what he wants from you too. I'm there. Even in the darkness, I am there. And there is something on the other side. Did you catch this as Jesus was talking about himself in John chapter 10, the way that he described a shepherd? He would lay down his life for his sheep. He would lay it down. And he did. He did. So if you're trying to figure out how much it is that God loves you, I don't necessarily want you to look only to a limited aspect of your circumstances, which might be the darkness. I want you to look to the cross and the empty tomb. That's how much he loves you. But I also want to encourage you with some other words. Because when you're in the darkness, you can feel the weight of the moment. Is that fair? You can feel it. It's real. But feeling the weight of the moment does not mean you don't have faith. Jesus felt the weight of the moment in Gethsemane. If he felt it, we will too. We will too. And I take something from that. I take something from it. What I take from it is that I can simultaneously be in a place where I am spiritually really struggling and yet be a person of faith. I can simultaneously spiritually be a person that is deeply struggling and I can still walk in obedience to him. All of these things are true. All of these things are true and all at the same time. All at the same time. He never once asked me to pretend like I am not going through what I'm going through. And he didn't ask you to do that either. Instead, he made a promise. I'm the shepherd. I'm the good one. Stay close. Stay close.
We hope you have enjoyed the podcast. For more information about our church, visit www.woodridge.org.